Hey there.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. How you doing?
I'm good.
Cool. Where are you?
I'm in Malibu, California right now.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, we were on a family vacation out, and we went to Italy for a couple of weeks, and then we flew back into the States, into California, before we head back home to Tennessee.
All right. Where'd you go in Italy?
We went to Rome and Tuscany and then the Amalfi Coast.
Yeah, those are good choices.
Yeah.
I've gone skiing in northern Italy, up in the Dolomite Mountains.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever been up there?
No.
Oh, spectacular. Well, I'm from Colorado, so I kind of like mountains, you know.
Well, see, I don't ski. I've never skied in my entire life. It's kind of a career hazard for me. You know,
Yeah.
if I fall and break a wrist or something, or even sprain a wrist or whatever, it's like then everybody's out of work for a while, you know.
Well, some people get their thumb caught and do that
Oh,
with a
wow.
thumb, and that wouldn't help either.
No,
But
that would suck.
the Dolomites are beautiful in the summertime too. I've been there also. So my name is Jeff Anderson, co-host of the All Blues program here at KUVO, which we run on Saturdays. I trade off with a fellow by the name of Sam Mayfield, Sammy Mayfield, who is an actual blues guy, unlike me. Have you ever run into Sammy?
It's entirely possible. Over, you know, doing this now for going, you know, for more than 30 years, I've probably run across just about everybody, to be honest with you.
He was the music director for Solomon Burke for many years.
Well, okay, cool. Well, then I'm sure that we've crossed paths at some point.
Yeah, so he still has a blues band and plays gigs in Denver occasionally, but you know, he's not doing it full time. It's nice to have a real live blues guy on the radio.
Yeah, that's great, man. You know, I hosted a blues radio show when my dad was working at the radio station in Shreveport when I was a teenager, before my career took off, when I was just starting to do shows and make a name for myself as a young blues artist. I hosted a blues radio show on my dad's radio station for a brief moment.
Oh, well, that's great. Glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've been doing radio for a long time, so I'm glad to hear you got a little bit of that. Although
Yeah.
playing live in front of a crowd is probably more fun than talking into a microphone.
Yeah, I live for the stage, but you know, I grew up around a radio station my whole life before I formed my band, and I used to go to work with my dad when he was doing the morning show. I'd get up at like, you know, 4:30 in the morning and ride with him to the radio station, and I would like pull all of his music and his spots, you know, for the hour, and I'd run the board for him while he was like just working the microphone. It was pretty cool, you know. Like I aspired to be a DJ, but my dad kept telling me, "You don't want to be a disc jockey. There's no money in radio." And it was like, you know, then when I wanted to be a musician, they were trying to talk, you know, a lot of people were trying to talk me out of that as well, but thankfully that one stuck, you know.
Yeah, well, we're all thankful for that, for sure. What kind of radio station was your dad working in? What was their music format at that time?
Well, he did everything. Like before I was born, he was like on an R&B station, and then when I was very young, he was on a country station. And then, like in my teenage years or my early preteen years, it kept changing format. So it was KTUX, and at one point it was Top 40. Then it was active rock. Then it was mainstream rock. Then it was I mean, it was like probably about three or four different formats over, I don't even know, probably from the time I was like 10 or 11 years old until I was about 18, you know. And so he kind of morphed with all of it. He was the GM and program director. And then, you know, for a while he was doing the afternoon drive, but he really loved doing the morning show. So that was kind of his mainstay, was, you know, the morning personality. He was Shotgun Ken Shepherd, and he was like the biggest, you know, he was the biggest DJ in town. So it was really interesting because, you know, when I was a kid, everybody's like, "Oh, you know, Shotgun Ken Shepherd, your dad is Shotgun Ken Shepherd." And then when I signed my record deal and I started doing my music, it switched from, you know, my dad being Shotgun Ken Shepherd to people going up to him saying, "Hey, you're Kenny Wayne's dad," you know. So his identity shifted from being, you know, the big radio DJ to just being Kenny Wayne's dad.
Yeah,
It's interesting.
tables are turned. Is your dad still with us?
Yeah, he is. And we still work together. Like, he quit his job at the radio station to help manage my career back then. And we've kind of run the whole business, you know, the entire time. So we're still doing it together.
Oh, well, that's great. Okay, so he was at the same radio station and just kept changing formats?
Well, no, like, so when I was a kid, he was at the original K Rock, which was actually KROK instead of K, you know, there's KROQ in Los Angeles, but the original K-Rock was KROK down there. And so he was on that. And then he went to KWKH, which is a legendary country radio station. And before I was born, he was on KEEL. And then, you know, when I was a kid, he wound up, or when I was a preteen and a teenager, he wound up at KTUX. And that's the one that changed formats probably three or four different times throughout, you know, my teenage years.
Okay, yeah, because that's one of the things about radio. Not only does it not pay well, but you usually get to move a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, he made the rounds. He was on all the big stations in town, but his you know, biggest tenure was running KTUX.
Okay, well, you know, I've been listening to your latest albums, the Dirt on My Diamonds, Volumes 1 and 2, even though that's not quite out yet, and saw you have a couple classic rock tunes on there, Elton John and ZZ Top. Did radio experience help get you the classic rock bug or anything?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, being around in a radio household, you know, my dad, we had music going 24/7. I mean, he was always listening to the radio station to make sure that the playlist was what he wanted it to be and that people were doing their jobs and, you know, all that stuff. And so we are always listening to music, and we went to every concert that came through town because he always had tickets and backstage passes. So I'd get to meet all these artists and kind of get a behind the scenes look of the touring industry and stuff like that. So, but in the process of listening to the radio station constantly, I was soaking up, you know, all these different kinds of music and all these different songs, and all of that stuff has kind of contributed to the artist that I am today and the music that I write and record for sure. So, yes, I mean, these two cover songs are songs that I heard a million times growing up as a kid and throughout my life. And what's interesting about when we cover songs, it's always by an artist who we respect, right? And it's also a song that I think that, you know, we can do a good version of. But sometimes these songs may be songs I've heard a million times and never struck me. Like the Elton John song, I heard that song like a million times, but one day I was in the car and I was driving down the road and it came on the radio, and then all of a sudden it just hit me. I was like, oh man, we could do a great version of this song, and I never thought or never considered it before. So I'll make a note. I have like a running list of cover songs that I keep handy, and when we're in the studio, I'll at some point, you know, when we're making a record, I'll pull up the list and say, hey, let's try this song, or let's try that song and see what happens. And so we did the Elton John song, and that one came out great. And it's on Volume 1, Dirt on My Diamonds, Volume 1. And then we did the ZZ Top song for Volume 2. And I mean, ZZ Top, one of my favorite all-time bands. And Billy Gibbons, obviously, guitar god, love him. And so really appropriate song for us as well.
Yeah, well, certainly there's a pretty close similarity between your music and ZZ Top for sure.
Yeah, we're connected. And I mean, you know, one of my earliest memories of, like, you know, being a kid was putting on the ZZ Top album, the Fandango record, and putting it on the record player in my grandfather's room and cranking up the stereo, like, you know, to ear bleeding levels, and jumping up and down on his bed playing air guitar to every song on that record. So, you know, my love and appreciation for ZZ Top, it goes very far back.
You like the live side or the studio side better on that one?
Well, I like the live stuff on that record. That's one of the cool things about that record, is that, like, it's half live recording and half studio stuff. But the live recordings, if I'm not mistaken, those were taken from a concert that was done at the University of Texas football stadium down in Austin, which was a massive concert. Like, at that time, ZZ Top was like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, ticket selling bands on the road. Like, they drew like the largest crowds. And that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was like the last show that was played at that venue, because they had destroyed the turf, like the football field and stuff. The crowd had just totally destroyed it. And so they didn't allow any concerts to be played there for many, many, many years. And then the next concert that was played at that stadium, I was on the bill. It was actually when the Eagles got back together for the Hell Freezes Over tour in the 90s, and I was the opening act for that show. So just a little connection.
All right, a little history. Yeah, well, I kind of think the athletic department runs things around the University of Texas. I think that's where that was. So, you know, not surprising.
Right?
But yeah, trying to figure out how to protect the field, I mean, it's not that hard. That happens all the time now, I guess. So, oh well.
Yeah, they found ways to better protect those things nowadays, but I think back then they weren't thinking about it.
All right, so I understand you're doing a whole bunch of interviews these days, you know, and I really hate to just ask the same question that you've probably answered five times in the last few days. But let me try this one. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I guess, you know, we're here to talk about the same stuff that I've been talking about for the past several days. My purpose of doing the interviews is to let the people know, you know, what we're up to. And it's like, you know, we have two new records out, which is, you know, a first for us to have two albums out so close together. So, you know, Volume 1 came out in November and Volume 2 is about to drop in September. And we're out supporting those two records and playing new material. And we're a band that, you know, this is a band that's been doing it for 30 years now. And we're still making new music. And we're enjoying playing new music in the shows, along with the songs that people have been listening to of ours for the past 30 years. So, you know, we're out supporting those. We're on tour doing that. And I have like four other records that I'm working on right now as well. So I've got a lot of material in the works that I want people to know about, because that's what keeps us out on the road. We make albums really so we can play concerts for people, because that's what we do best, is the live performance, you know. And so having this many records, you know, coming down the pipeline is going to keep us out on the road for the next several years. And so we want people to know about it.
Well, that's great. Yeah. And you guys do put on a live show. I've seen you several times and always a great time. I was just up in Aspen a couple of weeks ago and had a chance to talk to Bobby Rush. And he told us that you guys just did some recording. I think his story was that the plan was to record one or two tunes, and you ended up with 10.
Well, yeah, we recorded more than that, but I think the album is going to be 10 songs when it's all said and done. But yeah, that was a really amazing experience, and so that's probably going to come out next year. That's one of the albums I was referring to, but you know, we just kind of went in. There was no real roadmap. I had this blues festival that I started a few years ago called the Backroads Blues Festival. And he came out and joined us on a few shows a couple years ago on it. And we were backstage and I said, hey man, we should do a record together. He's from Louisiana. I'm from Louisiana, you know, two different generations, but both, you know, blues musicians and lovers of the genre. And it's kind of like two homeboys from the same state, but two different musical worlds kind of coming together. So he was like, yeah, man, let's do it. And so we really had there was no roadmap. There was no game plan. Like, as a matter of fact, I was calling him leading up to, we had scheduled some studio time, and I was trying to touch base with him just to kind of see what he was thinking and, you know, what did he want to do? And he was dodging my phone calls and stuff. He told me, he said, you know, he just wanted to go in with a clean slate. And so we went in and we thought we were going to do a stripped down record, and we ended up doing a little bit of both. So like, you know, about half the record is kind of really raw and stripped down acoustic kind of stuff. And then the other half, you know, has a band on it. And, it's a really great album. Like, I can't wait for people to hear it. It is 100% blues, and it's the blues that I love to play.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to it around here for sure. We play a lot of Bobby Rush and your stuff too. So, you know, it's a perfect match.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, it's like, he's a great harmonica player. And obviously he's a great singer, and, you know, it's like, well, when I did the, you know, I did a couple records with Stephen Stills from Crosby, Stills and Nash, and we did a couple of blues and blues rock records together as a band called The Rides. And in that situation, it was like, you know, well, Stephen wanted me to sing like half the songs, you know, he would sing half and I would sing half. But we got in the studio with Bobby. I was like, man, there's no way, dude. I mean, I'm not singing the blues next to this guy. This guy is, he's the real deal. And I'll play guitar all day long, but this man is going to be the one singing all these songs. And it worked out great. So, you know, I'm featured on all the guitar stuff. He's featured on all the vocals and the harmonica playing, and it worked out really great.
Well, that's good. Yeah, he put on a real fun show in Aspen. 90 years old. That's, I mean, a role model for all of us, I think.
That guy's a force of nature, man. He is absolutely incredible. I can't remember being so impressed with an individual, you know, other than, I mean, there have been people in my life that I've been blown away by, but I just wasn't prepared. Like, I knew him and I've known him and our paths have crossed many, many times, but, you know, working with somebody in an intimate setting like that in the studio and creating music with them is a different experience. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I just wasn't prepared for just how incredible that guy is. He's just unbelievable.
Yeah. You know, you think 90 years old, wow, but he can bring it. There's no question.
Yeah. And, you know, we didn't do, there's no trickery on this record. Like, you know, we didn't tune a single vocal take. Like, he just literally went out there and sang the stuff. And that's what the way he sang it is what you're hearing on the record. We didn't doctor anything up. This is 100% real performance. And the ones with the band, we all went out there and played that stuff together. We did, you know, one take, maybe two takes at the most. And what you hear is what happened. And we did it, you know, the old-fashioned way, the way records are supposed to be made.
That's great. I recently watched your movie 10 Days Out. I think it was Jerry Harrison that was basically saying, well, that's what we're doing here. I mean, there's no trickery. We're just recording it, and, you know, that's what it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's how a lot of some of the greatest records that have ever been made were made that way. And it's the best way to represent artists like this, you know, and artists that the kind of artists that were featured on the on the 10 Days Out documentary as well. So, I mean, it's just, you know, that's as real as it gets. And that's what this music is all about. And that's what the people deserve to hear.
Well, before we run out of time, I wanted to ask you about the two new albums a little bit more. And we talked about the two covers, but you wrote most of the rest of the songs. Is that right?
Yeah. So we wrote these songs down in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. We went into Fame Recording Studios for like a week and just sat and just like hammered out a big collection of songs. And, you know, I could have divided them up into two separate albums that were completely unrelated, but I thought it made for a compelling package to do a volume one and a volume two, since they all kind of came out of the same writing session. You know, just like, instead of the standard, you know, let's all meet up in Nashville or let's all meet up down in Louisiana and, you know, write some songs. We decided to go down to Muscle Shoals and go into Fame, because that place is like a time warp and so many legendary records have been made in that place. So we wrote these songs, and it could have been, you know, two completely separate records that came out of it. But I thought, since they were all kind of written right in that same session, and there was kind of this almost this musical common thread throughout these songs, that it might make a compelling proposition to do a like a double album, if you will, but volume one and volume released at different times. And so that gave us an opportunity to put out two records in less than 12 months, which is a first for me. I mean, we've never put out two separate albums that close together. So, and it's great, because all that does is it keeps us out here on the road doing what we love to do, which is play music. You know, a new album means a new tour. And a new tour means that we get to go back and see our fans again and do what we love to do and do what we do best.
Well, I think having a little bit of time between the two releases gives people a chance to digest the songs on there, too. You know, it's probably easier to deal with 8 to 10 songs than it is 16 to 20 or something like that. The cuts in the middle just kind of get lost, it seems
well,
to me.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, most people nowadays, like, the idea that somebody's going to be able to sit down and listen to 16 songs or 14, even 14 or even 12, to be honest with you, in one sitting, like, it's just not realistic. There's too many distractions. There's too many, you know, things that are competing for people's attention. But, you know, an 8-song record, first of all, I went and researched. I put some thought into this. And I'm like, you know, how many legendary albums were there that had 8 songs on them? And the list is incredibly long. And part of the reason for that is because a lot of those records were made back in when vinyl was the primary format. And you can only squeeze so many songs on each side of a record before you start losing fidelity, right? And so generally, you know, when vinyl was the main format for albums, then it was about 4 songs on each side. So that made for an 8-song album. And so I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know, this is roughly, you know, between, depends on the songs and the record, but it's right around, on average, 40 minutes of music. And so that's doable. You know, that's doable for people to be able to sit down and put on a record, even if it's like, you know, in the car sitting in traffic, or if you're on a road trip, like, you know, you can get through 40 minutes of music before you have to take a bathroom break. And so that's doable. And what I want is, I want people to, what I hope is that people are going to seek out the new record and listen to the whole thing at least once, you know. But we've morphed into this era of consuming music where, because of streaming, it's like everybody looks for a song. But as an artist, you know, I'm still creating records because it's an entire experience, you know. And that's what I grew up listening to, was albums. And so that's what I like to make.
Well, I certainly did as well. And I've always thought that, you know, a well-constructed album is one of those things that it's just greater than the sum of its parts. You listen to it all the way through.
Yeah, well, one song is not really like a creative statement. You know, it's kind of like a chapter in a book. But, you know, people don't release books one chapter at a time. It's like they create the whole body of work, you know, and some chapters are, you know, they're all kind of different, but they all contribute to the greater experience. And so, you know, I feel like as an artist, you know, an album is a work of art, you know, and it's like supposed to take you on a journey. And that's why we still make records instead of just releasing, you know, one song every few months and putting that out.
Well, it's also, I think, kind of a historic document of this band at this time. And, you know, if you're a music nerd like me, you know, you see an album that came out this year and, oh, I know who was in the band at that time, you know, and so it's probably going to sound a little bit like this because of the personnel involved and that sort of thing, too. So there's a lot more substance to it than just one song just floating out there through the ether, kind of unconnected to anything.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. It's a moment in time. It's like, this is the band. This is the band in that era. You know, this is that artist, that point in their career. And every record that we've put out is that, for sure.
So the last thing I wanted to talk to you about is the Experience Hendrix project, which you're going to jump on board one more time at least, because that's, I think, the only tour date that you have right now that's going to come through Colorado. I believe Experience Hendrix has a date in Colorado Springs in early October. And this is something that you've done quite a few times, because I think I've seen you at least twice in Denver with the Experience Hendrix project. And you guys just, you know, you kill Voodoo Child, both Voodoo Childs.
Yeah.
Are you going to do that one again?
I'm sure we will. I mean, you know, for me, when I formed my band when I was 15 years old and started doing my own shows, that's always been like the last song of the show for me. I mean, there's only a handful of times probably in my life that I've not done that song, you know, one of my shows. And so naturally on the Hendrix tour, we do that song as well, and a medley of the two. And then, yeah, we're going to be doing several other songs. But, you know, I love doing that tour. It's so great. If you love guitar players, if you love guitar music, I can't think of a better tour, to be honest with you, because Jimi Hendrix is arguably the greatest guitar player of all time, and his catalog of music is just an incredible platform for people like me and the other artists on the tour to be able to get up and do our thing and pay tribute to him at the same time.
Well, there's got to be a great time backstage with all those guitar players. I mean, you guys must have a great time hanging out with each other.
Yeah, we've built this camaraderie over the years doing the tour, and so it's just kind of like a big family on the road together, and everybody has a blast.
Okay, well, we're looking forward to that. I think it's time for us to let you go, and appreciate you taking some time for doing this, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.